Chapter 4, Awakening. We arrived at the hospital in no time because there were no other cars on the road, and Dr. Price drove faster than I've ever seen her drive before. She signed us in at the receptionist, who said that only family members were permitted to visit the patients. Dr. Price explained that she was their attending physician and that we were her kids. She was not about to leave us alone at home on Christmas morning. She spoke with such authority and intensity that the receptionist didn't dare ask how this very Caucasian kid was a member of a very African-American family. She just said, "Of course, Dr. Price," and led us through. We were just outside the patient's room when I asked Dr. Price why I was there. After all, she had been very clear that only their family members could visit them. Dr. Price turned to me and said, "That is an excellent question, Mark, and I would like an answer before we go in." I just stood there with my mouth agape, not knowing what to say. "I haven't even called their families to inform them that their children are awake because I want to examine them first." However, the first words out of their mouths were that they needed to see Mark Panagopoulos. I sincerely doubt that four kids from various neighborhoods around the city met you 6 years ago when they were 13 and you were only 7. I demand to know what was going on. Tell me how you knew they'd wake up and tell me how they know you. I gulped. "I promise I'll explain it later, but it's going to take more time than we have now. I need to get in there and talk with those guys." Tyler added, "It's just like we told you, Mom. Watch out for Mirth agents. They're going to be coming soon." Dr. Price shook her head and put her arm around her son to reassure him. Then we went into the room. We heard hushed voices whispering when we opened the door, but the room went silent as we entered. A girl looked at Tyler and asked, "Are you Mark?" Tyler shook his head and pointed at me without saying anything. I said, "Hi, I'm Mark. Who are you?" The girl said, "I'm Venike Haynes," but it came out as more of a question than an answer. I nervously looked at Dr. Price and decided to go for it. I said, "Hi, Laquel. I'm Stavius." The boy patient looked scared and whispered, "Can we trust them?" as he pointed at Dr. Price and Tyler. I looked at Dr. Price, who nodded her head but appeared totally confused. "Yeah, they're cool. This is the doctor who has been caring for you, and this is her son, Tyler. Tyler knows all about Mirth, and his mom is trustworthy. You must be Kurz, or Martin Taylor, here on Earth." The room suddenly became a cacophony of voices. Everyone was talking at once. Laura and Lakeisha introduced themselves, and all of them were asking me questions. When Laura asked if they really had been asleep for 6 years, Lakeisha grabbed her sizable breasts and said, "Honey, I did not have these when I went to sleep last night." There were several minutes of laughing and hugging, although they could barely raise their arms from being immobile for 6 years. Dr. Price finally shouted, "Enough!" and insisted that Tyler and I leave the room. As we left, I reminded them not to mention anything about Mirth to anyone. They agreed, and Tyler added, "That goes double for you, Mom." Dr. Price gave them a preliminary exam and declared them fit enough to meet their parents. Venike asked to see me one more time, and Dr. Price let me in to say goodbye. Venike's arms were spread open, and tears were streaming down her face as she cried, "Thank you for saving us, Stavius." I hurried over and gave her another hug, and the others in the room echoed her thanks. Dr. Price looked on in disbelief as the others repeated her message until she told them that we had to leave and called their parents. The first call she made, however, was to ask my mom to pick up Tyler and me. She told Mom that everything was fine and that we would be waiting in the lobby. Then she walked us back down to sit by the receptionist, whom she wished a Merry Christmas and thanked for bending the rules. She informed us that we would be explaining everything to her later, before rushing back to her patients. Dad picked us up and wanted to know what was going on, but we said we couldn't tell him. Tyler giggled something about patient-doctor confidentiality, and Dad just shook his head and drove us home in silence. The rest of Christmas Day was pretty non-eventful until Chantel called just before dinner and told me to turn on the news. We were just about to sit down for our meal, and my family has strict rules about no television while we're eating. Dad relented, though, complaining that today seemed to be a day for breaking the rules. We turned on the news and saw Dr. Price in the background with the announcer talking about the Christmas miracle. 4 unrelated children who had slipped into comas on the same night nearly 6.5 years ago had suddenly awakened together this Christmas morning. The video expanded to show Dr. Price fielding questions at a podium in front of a group of stunned and disheveled parents. She talked about the children, their health, her expectations for their recovery, and how she had never given up hope. She paused when a reporter asked why she thought they woke up today, after all these years. She thought for several seconds before saying she wasn't sure, but that she had tried a procedure just last night and that perhaps it had an effect. Another reporter suggested that maybe it was their family's prayers to Jesus on this holiest of days. Dr. Price looked relieved and admitted, "You're probably right. That is as good of a reason as any I can give." Dad turned off the television, but my family spent the rest of the meal trying to pry information out of me. I kept saying that I didn't know anything and that I was sworn not to say anything even if I did. I'm not sure they entirely believed me, but eventually the conversation and our family returned to normal. Dad complained about overeating, Mom fussed about what to do with all the leftovers, and my sister was chastised for playing games on her phone under the table. Dr. Price stopped by after dinner. She looked exhausted but wanted me to tell her everything I knew about the four kids. I said that we were having an emergency meeting of Club S&M at Ms. Dada's house tomorrow at noon. She agreed to come and even offered to drive Tyler and me to the meeting. Everyone was at Ms. Dada's house when we arrived, including Mr. Narwani. I gave Ms. Dada a questioning look and she just smiled and nodded. I kind of expected her to tell Urtish how to remember Mirth when Mr. Narwani awoke on Earth and wait for him to arrive. I guess she took Veronica's advice to heart. Mr. Narwani was taking Dr. Price's coat when she demanded that he tell her what was going on. She wanted to know about Mirth, Stavius, the four kids in the hospital, the secret agents, and the danger they posed. Mr. Narwani looked shocked and answered that he didn't know any of those things, but offered to get her a cup of chai. I don't think she believed him, but she accepted his offer for the hot drink and collapsed on the sofa. She told us that the kids in the hospital were improving, that their parents were ecstatic, and that everyone wanted to know what she had done. She had been giving endless interviews to reporters from around the world because the Cincinnati Christmas miracle was one of the few positive stories in the news this week. Ms. Dada brought a few more chairs into the room so we could all sit and then stood in front of us with an expression I instantly recognized. Her face looked exactly like the way I felt when I had to tell Dr. Price about the comatose kids the first time. I gave her a thumbs-up sign and she smiled at me before beginning. Ms. Dada spent nearly an hour explaining how there are 13-year-olds who dream of a magical world we call Mirth and that their dreams are genuine. She spoke about the prophecy and about our adventures, with various embellishments interjected by us. Our teacher explained that Mirth was in the middle of a war. She then added that the other side might have people who visit Earth in their Mirth dreams. She wasn't convinced of this, but if they did, those people would not hesitate to abduct or even kill children here to win their war. The room was silent when she finished. Dr. Price had stared at Ms. Dada the entire time and never said a single word. She set down her now cold chai and began to speak. "So you actually believe this, Sara? And you're teaching these children these beliefs? Is this some kind of a cult?" she asked with growing panic in her voice. Ms. Dada quickly clarified that this wasn't a cult and that she didn't know we were having these dreams until the club was already formed. I stated that the club was our idea and that I had been having these dreams long before I had even heard of Ms. Dada. Then I pulled out my journals as proof, and Tyler, Ethan, and Malik all confirmed my story. Dr. Price seemed somewhat relieved for a moment, but then her eyes flashed with panic, and she quickly asked, "So everyone in this room is a dreamer?" Tyler spoke up to say, "No, Mom. Malik, Ethan, and I don't have these dreams. We wanted to help Mark, so we formed Team Stavius Earth Division." I groaned when I heard that old name again, but nobody else seemed to notice because Ms. Dada quickly added, "But my husband and I do." Mr. Narwani's mouth popped open and he exclaimed, "No, I don't. I have never heard any of this before." Ms. Dada patted his hand and replied, "Yes, you do, dear. You just don't remember your dreams. That's pretty common." Nancy and Veronica giggled as Mr. Narwani stuttered, "No, I don't have dreams like that. And if I did, how would you know? And if you knew, why didn't you tell me?" Nancy interjected, "Your name is Mr. Urtish on Mirth. We've all known who you are for a long time, but we didn't tell Tara, Ms. Dada, until a few days ago." Veronica added, "Besides, Tara hates Urtish. In fact, we all do." Neither Ms. Dada nor Mr. Narwani knew how to respond to that, but it didn't matter. Dr. Price was still on her mission for information. "I honestly don't care about all this. Tell me how the comatose children know you and how you knew when they would awaken. I was ready to answer, but Ethan spoke up first. Mr. Ertish told Stavius, Mark, that the last set of four heroes disappeared 6 years ago, and he assumed they were captured and killed. Then Mark slipped into a coma because Stavius lost his magical energy. After that, we guessed that those other kids were probably trapped somewhere without enough magical energy to wake up here. Then Tyler found them.
Tyler added, I'm sorry I hacked your accounts, Mom. We had to find them, and I did. Those kids all slipped into comas the night they were captured on Mirth. They were all taken to a slave camp with no magical energy where they were stuck for 6 years until these guys freed them. We knew they'd be able to wake up once they were re-energized. I am really sorry about using your account, Mom.
That's all right, Tyler. Just don't do it again, answered Dr. Price. But that's not all, continued Tyler. I also found out that lots of 13-year-old kids die in their sleep around the same time of the year, going way back in time. We think the people die here if they're killed on Mirth. That's why we're so scared. You're scared? Asked Nancy. What about us? For Sarah, Elise, and I were this close to being executed. Dr. Price said, Well, if you really believe this, then you should all get as far away as you can from this prophecy and whatever war is going on.
Malik replied, Yeah, we considered that, but you don't know the Septumculums. Those people will never stop searching for all of us on Mirth and here. Mark and the others will either wind up dead or in a coma if they try to run, and we might be killed too. Besides, we have a real chance of fulfilling the prophecy, which means that no more kids will ever have to die for it.
The rest of our friends nodded and grunted, Yeah, when he finished. Dr. Price said,
You keep mentioning secret agents looking for you here on Earth. What exactly do you mean by that, and why would they be searching for you here?
Malik answered, We know that some people on Earth travel to Mirth in their dreams. What if there are people on Mirth who visit Earth in their dreams? If that's possible, then the Septumculans might find it easier to kill an unsuspecting kid here than a battle-hardened warrior on Mirth.
I could tell Dr. Price did not like this thinking, but she boldly asked, And what would these Mirth agents look like?
Ms. Dada answered, Oh, they'd look like anyone else, but we have a theory about some things which would make them seem suspicious. Mark and his friends asked to start this science and math club when they learned that stronger mathematical and scientific understanding here on Earth increases magical abilities on Mirth. They don't have much math and science on Mirth since they rely on magic instead of technology.
While the reverse might occur to Mirth dreamers on Earth, we suspect that it is not precisely the same. We think that the magical abilities of Mirth dreamers would manifest themselves as charisma and leadership on Earth. So, Mirth dreamers are more likely to be people with dominant personalities, like politicians, elected officials, bureaucrats, or even religious leaders, than scientists. They would certainly be searching for the current set of heroes. They would also likely be attempting to reduce the scientific and mathematical abilities of our early teenagers to weaken these and future heroes. Dr. Price tested, You mean like the New America movement, which is blaming technology for everything from crime to autism, war, and divorce. They're always protesting outside the hospital, claiming that we are defying God's plan whenever we save someone's life.
Mr. Nawani added, And I'm not saying I believe any of this nonsense. It would, however, explain why politicians instead of educators are driving ineffective curriculums based more on testing than learning.
Ms. Dada concluded, I am not convinced that Mirth agents even exist, but the children do, and I've learned to trust their instincts. They just want you to be careful. The awakened children are not much of a threat to the Septumculans anymore. Still, they, or the person treating them, could lead these Mirth agents to their true targets.
Dr. Price looked at the scared faces surrounding her and said, Well, then I guess I don't feel so bad that I slightly bent the hospital's rules today.
Medical professionals, family members, reporters, and friends have all been asking how I managed to awaken these children. I, of course, haven't had any answer other than to state that I recently attempted a rather standard procedure. No one really believes that my procedure worked, including myself, but I really don't have a better story.
This morning, however, two people from the Center for Disease Control barged into my office to ask me the same questions. They also demanded case files on any other comatose patients or patients with vivid dreams. I didn't like these people from the moment I saw them. They shouldn't have been able to get into my office and had no right to demand my patient records. Besides, I never mentioned anything about dreams to anyone other than Mark, and they didn't even appear to understand the standard medical procedure I used. They told me their names, but conveniently forgot to bring business cards. I called some friends of mine at the CDC after they left, and no one had ever heard of the names they provided. I immediately edited Mark's records to show that, rather than being in a coma, he was unresponsive when admitted and awakened after several hours of hydration. I concluded that he had been suffering from dehydration due to heat and a bad cold. This wasn't far from the truth, but I didn't want his name appearing in a record search for people in comas. I had never done anything like this before in my career and was feeling guilty all morning. Now, however, I know it was the right thing to do. I still find it difficult to believe your stories entirely, but have to admit that there must be an underlying cause for all these coincidences. I'm not a believer in telepathy, but perhaps you're all having some sort of shared dream. You don't believe in telepathy because you haven't met a unicorn, I laughed. Nancy added, or a dragon, and Veronica bumped her fist.
We think Mirth dreamers travel to a parallel universe in their dreams, said Malik.
Perhaps, Malik, but I think that a shared dream is more plausible than an alternate reality, Dr. Price quietly disputed.
A dream that lasts thousands of years? Malik countered. He asked Mr. Narvani to pull out my paper showing that this had been going on for about 5,000 years, and our conversation continued for another hour.
Dr. Price received a phone call and told us she had to leave. She promised to discreetly inform her four patients that she now knew about Mirth and to remind them not to discuss their dreams. I asked her to invite them to our club when they were strong enough to attend. Dr. Price looked surprised at my request and asked why I thought they would want to come. I answered that it is tough to keep a secret like this. I would never have been able to make it without being able to talk about what I was going through with Malik, Ethan, and Tyler. My friends might not get to visit Mirth, but they are essential members of the team. Dr. Price stared at me and said that I was an extraordinary young man, which was totally embarrassing. Then she told the others they were also all special, so they got to feel uncomfortable too. I offered to have Mom give Tyler a ride home so that Dr. Price could go straight to the hospital. It felt good to have another teammate. Well, two more, if Ms. Dotta can convince her husband that we aren't all crazy.